Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. Happy holidays to everyone out there, and welcome to our Heme for the Holidays show, our salute to red blood cells and a chemical on the red blood cells called hemoglobin. That's our sponsor for today's show, and we'll be talking more about it. Thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio, and thanks to Bill in California, who actually made a suggestion for a show topic that we're going to try to take up in one of our future shows. Thanks, Bill, for listening, and we do value your opinions. Speaking of something that we
value, is that what you were going to say?
It took me for a second. You know, the transitions from a valued listener to a co-host, you know how that goes. Mentally, it's hard to make that shift, but I've done it now. With us from the University of Kentucky, the telecommunications guru, the man who is overseeing all the communications at UK. Rick, am I overstating this? I don't think I'm overstating this. You have a hand in virtually everything that they do.
You are overstating it just a little bit. I'm not responsible for all of it, but I do have a few of the things that are considered communications, like the network, like, you know, the wireless network, the wired network, the telephones, the
email,
the chat, instant message, whatever you want to call it, and some other things that we don't talk about or are part of that dirty underbelly of communications that we don't talk about.
Fair enough. But
there's quite a few. The phones are a lot. There's like 22,000 phones at UK. That should be enough.
And every time a phone rings, Rick gets his
shivers. Actually, you know, really what really bothers me is when phones don't ring.
That's fair enough. Actually, every time a phone doesn't ring, Rick gets loses a tooth. How about that? But tell them about the presence of Health Matters.
The massive digital presence that is Health Matters.
Absolutely.
You can find the audio of the shows as on WMKY.org. That's right. That's Moorhead State Public Radio's website. Do a search in the menus. You'll find the local shows. There you'll find Health Matters. And there you will find the more recent shows. You'll see a show summary. You'll see a link to the audio. Listen to the audio. Listen to us over and over and over again. You know, here's the beauty of it. We really don't care how many times you listen to it. You can listen to it as much as you like.
I promise you, we'll be fresh. Every repeat you do, we will still maintain
we'll
the
sound
same level
exactly right
of enthusiasm.
Well, welcome to digital audio. So after you've done that on Moorhead State Public Radio's website, WMKY.org, jump over to Facebook. There's where the real fun starts. You can interact with Health Matters. You can talk to Tony directly. All you have to do is leave him a little message. He actually logs in. He actually reads the posts. Matter of fact, frankly, I'm the tech guy. He posts more than I do on there. So Facebook's a wonderful way to interact with Health Matters. Send us some information. Send us a show topic. You know, leave us some feedback. Or, you know, maybe there's just a question that you have about something that we've maybe talked about, or maybe something you think Tony ought to know about. Because, you know, I don't want to be asking any questions, so just ask them all to Tony. But that's where you can do it, facebook.com/HMRadioShow.
Our sponsor for today's show, fun facts about blood.
Are there any?
Yes. This I learned a lot, frankly.
Really?
Yes. I thought, well, heme for the holidays, I'll talk about hemoglobin. Hemoglobin is the chemical on your red blood cells that actually carries the oxygen. But first, let's talk a little bit about the blood system and also about your blood vessels.
If I get dizzy and faint, will you go ahead and carry on without me, Tony?
Yeah, I'll just...
Because I'm just warning you, from a blood and gore standpoint, I was not cut out for healthcare.
Well, put it this way. If something happens, as much as I care for you, I'll be sure to stand back and give you plenty of room for air.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You're so gracious.
Fun fact number one, these are somewhat random fun facts, but I found this. Every play by Shakespeare mentions the word blood at least once. The least bloody Shakespearean play is Merry Wives of Windsor, in which the word blood occurs only once. How about that?
Okay.
Sure.
Have you read them all?
No.
Have you read any?
Oh, Shakespearean plays, absolutely.
All of them?
No.
I mean, I'm saying, have you read one all the way through?
Yeah.
Which one was it, Romeo and Juliet?
Well, we did Romeo and Juliet.
Oh, we did.
Yeah.
So you're a dramatic actor.
No, I'm not a dramatic. This was in class. King Lear, also. I, in Othello, I sort of like Shakespeare, to be honest.
Really? Yeah. You're kind of a closet Shakespearean. Do you dress up like that?
No, absolutely
really?
Not.
I bet you there's pictures somewhere of you dressed up.
You, first of all, I don't. But secondly, even if I did, you're assuming we have a camera. You know,
what?
We don't have a camera.
What would your brothers have done had you have come home dressed Shakespearean?
Well, I'm the middle one, so I would get beat up by one, but the other one I probably could have handled. Fun fact number two.
I think if they ganged up on you, you'd have been in trouble.
Number two, the average human adult has 4.7 to 5 liters of blood in their body. It's about
some of us more than others.
It's about 7% of our total body rate. That's right.
So, Tony, question. Does an obese person have more?
Well, yeah, more blood vessels. Yeah, and as a matter of fact, I know a pregnant woman can gain about half additional blood volume with the pregnancy. So, yeah, as the amount of blood needed expands, the amount of blood expands, and an obese person has to supply blood to more tissues. This was an interesting fun fact. It would take 1.2 million mosquitoes, each biting once, to completely drain your blood. So you get even a dozen or a couple dozen mosquito bites. You can shrug that off, except they itch.
Well, but what about the disease?
That's right. Yeah, there's that. But they won't drain your body dry.
So I can probably go out and get an argument with them. I'll probably be okay.
Fair enough. Fun fact number three, blood is 45% red blood cells. They do have white blood cells and platelets, but that's smaller numbers. So 45% of your blood is red blood cells. The other 55% is plasma. We call that the hematocrit, and we check that. If it's below 45%, a person has anemia or low blood.
And if you're in the healthcare business, let's just be honest, we call it the crit.
Yep.
Right? What's our crit? And here's the beauty of it, Tony. I actually, believe it or not, when I did stuff for a living, I actually worked on Haemonetics Cell Savers, which were back in the 80s, late 80s, early 90s. They were brand new technology, and they were the most intriguing thing. And the military brought them out to clean blood cells. And so you literally could take dirty blood and put it into these cell savers in the military. They actually demonstrated that. Now, in a healthcare environment, obviously, you're taking the patients, you know, you're doing surgery on a patient, and you're actually going to, you know, harvest that blood as part of the surgical process and then clean it with this cell saver. And the biggest thing to tell whether you did a good job with your cell saver or your cell saver was working properly or not was to do the infamous crit test, because you had to get above, I think it was about 25 or 30 before you really wanted to use that blood. But anyway, it was fascinating. I still remember back to those young lad days when I could actually fix something.
The days of your youth. Now, when he talks about the crit, that's the percent of the total blood volume that is red blood cells. And again, normally that's around 45%.
Now, that's not a packed red blood cell. That's just because a lot of times, like when you see blood hanging up in a bag, That's got
it's just blood cells.
Yeah, but it's actually like 100% or
yeah, yeah, close to it.
So, you know, that's the thing. You have to think about that. In your body, you don't have that. I mean, it's...
Fun fact number four, because this is an interesting one, there are 60,000 miles of blood vessels in the human body.
Some of us more than others.
80% of those are capillaries, the really tiny blood vessels. Your blood vessels could wrap around the earth 2.5 times since it's about 25,000 miles in circumference. Is that not cool?
I think I could go three. Three, I think I can do three whole laps.
That's our sponsor, Hemoglobin, the color of your life.
You, see, I think you're no better than 2.6.
12 fun facts about blood. We'll pick that up in our second fractional portion. Just a little bit of time left since we have goofed off so much.
We got 6 minutes. What are you worried about?
Deer hunting season. November 8th.
Did you participate this year?
I did not. I'm not a big deer hunter. I mean,
I do every time I get my car.
Well, true. And the other thing is, I've been
unsuccessful this year, thank goodness.
I have some deer that they like to hang out in our horse pasture, and I've had to run them off several times. But no, I have not done so with a gun. This is an old article, but it was just reprinted back in November 24th. Now, again, deer season over for this year, but it's something you got to think about. This was from Beaumont Hospital Cardiac Rehabilitation Program. They monitored some deer hunters while they were hunting, published it in the American Journal of Cardiology back in 2007. 25 middle-aged male hunters went in the woods equipped with heart rate monitors and hopefully also some weapons to kill the deer with. When they saw a deer, when these people, they were standing still or they were in their deer stands, when they saw a deer, their heart rate doubled.
Really?
Just from seeing a deer. The heart rate of some hunters would double even though they're standing still. After you shoot, gut, and drag the deer out of the woods, heart rate's well above the maximum recommended amounts. So Although you think of hunting, especially deer hunting, as kind of sitting in a tree stand, and that's the leading cause of injuries of deer hunters is falling out of tree stands. Still, it does produce a substantial strain on the heart out in the middle of the woods. Their recommendations, first of all, hunters with known heart disease and at high risk should have a checkup and a physician approval to hunt. Secondly, start walking 30 minutes a day, 8 to 12 weeks prior to the hunt. That is, build up your aerobic capacity. You're going to need that for your hunting. Here's one, Rick, I don't know. Refrain from consuming alcohol and smoking during hunting.
I would concur with that 100%.
I agree.
To me, it's not necessarily, if you're hunting with a camera, I think it's okay if you go ahead and drink a little. But if you're hunting with a gun or a bow or something deadly, some deadly form of weapon,
yeah,
then you absolutely need to adhere to that
now,
rule.
Now, bow and crossbow season is still going on, so Rick's points are appropriate. Refrain from eating a heavy meal before hunting. Well, I mean, you always get up and get a big breakfast before you go hunting.
I take donuts with me.
Yeah.
Don't you?
Hunters with heart disease should not drag a deer out of the woods.
Why do you think they made gators?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, those cars, golf carts, basically, the oversized golf carts, I mean, that's what they're used for. I mean, let's be honest. They're your chance to haul out your kill.
Finally, hunters need to seek immediate medical attention if they experience dizziness, chest pain, or heart palpitations. Here's the problem with hunting, Rick. It is much like snow shoveling.
There's
several, but a lot like snow shoveling in that you can't stop halfway through. It's not like you can get a deer halfway out of the woods and say, you know what, I'm going to take a break. I'll come back tomorrow. You have to finish it, just like you have to finish shoveling snow. And when you're in cold weather doing an activity you have to finish, that in many cases leads to overexertion, which leads to problems. It is important to understand that although there are the risk of falling out of the tree stand, injury, and of course we worry obviously about people shooting themselves or someone else, heart disease is something you have to think about with your hunting, your loved one goes hunting, important for them to make sure that they are in decent physical shape before they go and not to do stupid stuff out in the woods.
Okay. I'm all in for no stupid stuff, although I will say the majority of the fun of my life has come doing stupid stuff.
In the woods.
Well, Tony, I'm not going there.
Okay. I'm just saying, what better place to do stupid stuff than in the woods? You got to give me that.
Well, I mean, you know, you go into for you doing stupid stuff in the woods usually involves a chainsaw.
Right. Chainsaw, tractor.
Or both.
Yeah.
Or a rope.
Other manly tools.
A rope.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
I've seen some of the rope you have. You've got manly rope.
So we'll cut trees down and we'll do stuff in the woods. Right. But this is serious. If you or someone you love is out hunting, and especially deer season. Deer, generally the biggest thing a lot of us will hunt in the eastern Kentucky woods, can cause some problems.
I don't know, Tony. When I really get an urge to go hunting, it's usually for donuts. And they don't go. I don't usually find them in the woods.
You know, these shows just write themselves with you on board, Rick. I mean,
the only difference here, the only difference between you and me is I'm being honest.
Okay, fair enough. I'm lying through my teeth, but still.
No, you probably went hunting for something to eat last night.
I don't know how to answer that. Sure, I mean, yeah, we got something to eat.
Okay.
Now, let me finish the section with this. The American Heart Association, back last year, they looked at warning signs before cardiac arrest. So we're going to keep pushing this, which is why I'm doing this. They looked at, first of all, there's about 360,000 out-of-hospital cardiac arrests in the U.S. People's hearts simply stop, or they beat extremely fast, 360,000 times a year, 9.5% survive, but about 90% don't. There was a study in Oregon of 1 million people. They found 567 who had a cardiac arrest, and half of them had symptoms prior to the cardiac arrest, Rick. 55% had chest pain in the month before, 13% short of breath, and 4% had dizziness, fainting, or heart palpitations. If you have chest pain, shortness of breath, or dizziness, that might be your heart. Do not go out into the woods. But do go to the refrigerator now, find those donuts or some healthy snack, and we're going to take a break. We'll be back with our second fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Heme for the Holiday show because we are celebrating hemoglobin, which we are calling the Ted Turner of the bloodstream. It adds color to your life, and we've got our 12 fun facts about blood. Just to remind you from our first fractional portion, every play by Shakespeare contains the word blood. The average human adult has around 5 liters of blood in their body. 1.2 million mosquitoes could suck you dry, but less than that, you probably will have some blood left. Blood is about 45% red blood cells. That is your hematocrit. 55% of blood is plasma, a watery substance with some protein in it. There are 60,000 miles of blood vessels in your body, which could wrap around the earth 2.5 times. We're now up to fun fact number 5. Capillaries, the smallest blood vessels that run through your skin and your tissues, are 1/10 the diameter of a human hair. They are so small that red blood cells move through them one cell at a time. Despite the fact that red blood cells go one cell at a time, a red blood cell can make a complete circuit of your body from your heart back to your heart in around 30 seconds. Isn't
that incredible? 30 seconds.
That's pretty fast. Number 7, with your body at rest, the tissues only remove about a quarter of the oxygen on your blood cells. 3/4 actually goes back to the lungs, and the red blood cell gets a refill, and the hemoglobin is the chemical that carries it. Red blood cells have no nucleus, and they cannot divide. They live for about 120 days, and then they break down, and that's important as far as coloring, and we'll talk more about that. Your bone marrow, of course, will make more, but the red blood cell will break down after 120 days, and it cannot divide. Fun fact number 9, hemoglobin is the iron-containing, oxygen-transporting protein in the red blood cells. It carries oxygen from the lungs to the rest of the body. And fun fact number 10, in a total blood volume of 5 liters, which is what we've got in our body, we have about 3/4 of a liter of oxygen on the hemoglobin in our blood, and we have about 3/4 of a liter of oxygen in the lungs. So that means at any moment, you've got 1.5 liters of oxygen. Think of a 2-liter bottle, not 3/4 of the way full. That's how much oxygen in your body at any given time. If you stop breathing, if you step out into space or something like that, then you're working off 3/4 of a liter of blood, and that's not going to get you very long. It'll last for a few minutes, but you won't die immediately if you don't have any additional oxygen. Fun fact number 11, hemoglobin is not released into the blood, but is immediately broken down when your red blood cells are, when their life is over, into heme, which is the iron part, and the globins, which is the protein part. The iron is pulled off, and the heme makes something called bilirubin, which makes your blood the plasma have a kind of a pale yellowish color. It's also the stuff that makes you jaundiced if your liver doesn't clear it. If your liver does clear it, it puts it in the bile, it goes to the stool, and in the intestines, it turns brown. Your stool is brown because of the hemoglobin in your blood. Fun fact number 12.
I think I could have went all day without knowing that, Tony.
So see,
why?
Your blood colors your stool brown. The breakdown products from those red blood cells after 120 days.
So what makes
days,
my blood red?
Your blood is red because the hemoglobin, when it's intact and it has oxygen on it, it has a nice red color. Your veins, by the way, look blue.
Wait,
in your veins.
You have it
because
it has a nice red. Why is it red? You just said because it has a nice red color.
Yeah, because the hemoglobin makes it red. Now, if you want to go further than that, why is you are wearing a somewhat red shirt? Why is that shirt red? Well, I can tell you what wavelength it absorbs and all
red,
that.
It's blue.
That's stupid.
My shirt's blue.
That's ridiculous.
You need to get your eyes checked.
You need to pay attention to the show, and let me finish
what
the sponsor.
Show?
The final thing, number 12, if it is not excreted into the stool, it breaks down in the blood, and then it's out in the urine, and that's what makes your urine yellow. So you see, the
blood
hemoglobin
is the root of all your color.
Yeah, it is. It is the Ted Turner of your body. It colorizes everything from your skin to your stool and urine. This is kind of exciting.
Kind of? Well, I could go with kind of, because it kind of is.
That is kind of our sponsor, which most of us are pretty darn impressed with.
Well, you know, the thing is you were impressed with them before you came to the show. That's the first I've heard about it. I'm kind of impressed. It's okay.
Did you know why your stool was brown? You just thought because
I
it
never
was kind of
thought to ask.
I like that. And see, here's the thing. All my life, I knew this. I mean, if you have problems with your liver and it doesn't put those breakdown products in, the stool gets what we call clay-colored or chalky-looking. I knew that, but I really had never thought about the fact that hemoglobin colors everything, every part of your body, your skin. And, you know, when you have
anemia,
you get pale.
You know, the way you put it like that, I really don't want to know.
Okay.
Maybe.
Moving on then. The next question we've got is what? It's the holidays. It's festive. We know that. What should you be drinking for the holidays?
Well, Bloody Mary. I mean, that's kind of the theme of the show, you know.
I understand.
Orange Kool-Aid.
Well, first of all, I looked at the health effects of
eggnog.
No. Yeah. No. There is just, it's got eggs in it, yes, and I guess it's got nog in it, but frankly,
nog's not very good for you.
The nog cancels out the eggs. Eggnog is in no way a healthy drink. It is not what you want to teach your family to partake of or anything.
Tony, isn't it safe, though? I mean, if something tastes sweet or good like that, I mean, what's the odds that it's actually good for you?
Right.
I mean, come on. You're drinking cream.
Right. Chocolate's good for you, but not the milk chocolate that we've got. A more bitter form of chocolate's really ideal for you. And so you're right. If it tastes good, it's probably not good for you.
Yeah.
But at any rate, eggnog, I cannot make eggnog into anything good. Now, milk.
Have you ever made eggnog?
Yeah, my wife has a wonderful eggnog recipe. I did not. I got it out of the carton when I was growing up.
Cinnamon, you just like the cinnamon sprinkles that go on them?
Her family, my wife's family, boozes up the eggnog.
I'm ready. When are you going to invite us over? I don't recall getting that invitation yet.
We don't drink much. We haven't done it in years, but boy, it was, I remember it was pretty good stuff. So what do we drink, though? First of all, you remember we had a study of milk that we brought into this show a few weeks ago.
Do you drink milk?
I used to drink a lot of milk, not so much anymore.
Me either.
And they took a group of Swedish men and women, close to 100,000 men and women. They took a food questionnaire in 87 and 97, and then they followed them, and they concluded, this was published in a medical journal, and I'm just forgetting the name of the medical journal, for women, each glass of milk was associated with a 15% higher rate of death from all causes, a 15% higher rate of cardiovascular disease, 7% higher rate of cancer, three glasses of milk a day, 93% higher mortality. Now, we had a lot of problems with this study. They relied on people's assessments back in the 1980s and compared to outcomes 10, 15 years later. And we've seen these type of studies before with nutrients like vitamin D, antioxidants, vitamin E. They look good or they look bad when you do these questionnaires. And then when you actually test out adding that to the diet, it doesn't work as well. However, the point I would say with it is that, frankly, I'm not that impressed with the study. On the other hand, saying that milk is healthy, saying that milk is associated with a long life, I've got no evidence for that. So if I am picking my drinks based on the fact they will make me live longer, I cannot say that milk is the drink I pick.
So are we saying that, I mean, I'm hearing a kind of a common thread here is that, you know, cream-based drinks are probably just not that good for you.
Right. I think you can say that. Now, some people are going to mention wine. I don't have anything new on wine to bring to this show, but we know that wine in general has not been associated with shortening of the lifespan, and it's possible, especially for cardiovascular disease, wine may do you some good if you pick that as your usual beverage. Well, sugary sodas. I think you know where we're going with this. This was October 2014, American Journal of Public Health. Just a reminder, about 50% of us consume sugary drinks on a daily basis. One in four of us will consume up to four cans of pop, soda, soft drinks a day, and these may be a major contributor to obesity, so that's a problem. This study came out of University of California, San Francisco. They looked at 5,000 people who took part in the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, we call that NAHANES, from 1999 to 2002. They were 20 to 65 years old, and they had no history of heart disease. They were drinking around 12 ounces on average of sodas every day. 21% were drinking at least 20 ounces a day. And they took, they did these questionnaires back in 1999, and then they took a sample of blood that these people had given and looked at the telomeres, which are the little caps on the end of their genes. These caps, the longer they are, the longer people live in general. Short telomeres are not a good thing. People who drank large amounts of sugary drinks tended to have shorter telomeres, which is, at least in other studies, has been shown to be associated with a shortened lifespan. So this was not a good thing. Sugary soda drinks, the high fructose corn syrup, sugar sweetened sugary soda drinks, the markers we get look like they shorten your life. If they are contributing to obesity and they are also changing what we're seeing on your genes are associated with, I won't say they're doing the change, but people who drink them have shorter telomeres, this is not a good thing. We, for a variety of reasons, cannot recommend sugary soda drinks. Now, I will tell you, the European Journal of Cancer Prevention back in August said no signs that they're associated with cancer. So as best we can tell, the best studies we got, soft drinks are not associated with higher rates of cancer, but they're not healthy.
Right. Goes back to that sweet taste again.
Yeah.
I mean, really, we're kind of just focusing on things that, you know, are sweet, taste good, cream-based. I mean, you name it. Anything that's not water.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, we don't compare things to water. We ask, you know, we compare people who drink a certain thing to the general population. But we have not set it up so we say these people drink water, these people drink this whatever beverage.
And otherwise, they're statistically, you know, similar.
Yeah, that would be a nice study. I don't have that study anywhere in my list. I'll just tell you right now.
Well, you should do it.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, get aggressive.
Yeah, it's going to take 100,000 people on your seat. Here was a piece of good news, December 1st. This was a study from the American Dental Association funded by the NIH. So these are some pretty important players. They looked at 100% juice to see if it would promote tooth decay in 2000. Preschoolers, and they found it didn't. So there's been an argument for a long time that juice, the acids in juice, will rot your teeth.
Okay.
There's really no evidence for that.
Really?
Yeah. Now, we have somewhat soured, I'll use your term, on
fruit juices in general, because they do contain a lot of sugar and they don't seem to have what your body needs. It is much better to eat fruit than fruit juices. And so all the juicing industry was built on some pretty tenuous health assumptions that are probably not going to hold up. But at least for one thing, they don't seem to rot your teeth, which is okay. Now, next up, and you know where I'm going with this, coffee.
No, I don't.
Coffee.
I love coffee.
See, I don't, but I wish I did.
Well, you need to.
I know.
Force yourself.
I have started, since there's so much free coffee around.
Stuff.
Yeah. Since there's so much free coffee around, I've started trying to drink some coffee when I see some free coffee so that I can get used to it. I try to drink it black, or I might put some artificial sweetener in it, trying not to put a lot of dairy products in my coffee. But coffee's pretty good. Just to remind you, the American Journal of Epidemiology, again back, I believe this was August or September, looked at 21 studies, almost a million people who drank coffee or didn't drink coffee, and they found that people who drank coffee actually had a longer life expectancy. Coffee consumption, lower all-cause mortality, lower heart disease mortality, no effects they could tell, positive or negative, on cancer. But coffee looked like a pretty good thing.
Tastes like a pretty good thing, too.
Now, the reason I mention this is, okay, juice doesn't rot your teeth, but juice is still a problem.
Right.
Milk, which is what we think that we want our kids to drink, may be good for our kids, but when they get to adults, doesn't look like overall it helps you. It might hurt you. We're not sure.
Right.
Eggnog, no good.
Gotcha.
Soft drinks, no good.
Check.
So what should we be maybe training our kids to drink coffee?
Well, I mean, ultimately, though, Tony, what at the root, I mean, coffee is basically water run through a filter, right? Run through a series of grounds.
It's black, Rick.
Yeah, but
how can it be just water? It's
well, but it's been flavored.
Yeah.
I mean, but
it's
really, I mean, in the end, how much can actually come out of those coffee beans and get into that? I mean, you know, yeah, we're going to get some caffeine. We're going to get a little something, I don't know, some flavor. But how can that be harmful, Tony?
Well, this is.
But you don't know. You don't drink coffee.
No, I don't. But this was from a person who actually, a lactation counselor and a social scientist from LSU. Why they're publishing that on the internet.
Wait. Come on. Explain
lactation
that one to me.
Lactation counselor. A person that, she is an expert in the field of infant and maternal nutrition, and she wrote an article about kids drinking coffee. Coffee interferes with sleep. I will give you that. True. Coffee.
You know what? I have found, Tony, in this new job, that you can actually get more tired than coffee can sustain.
Coffee, I will tell you, caffeine in general doesn't get me too far past midnight anymore.
Yeah, I was going to say, I can drink coffee. I used to, I couldn't drink coffee at 6 o'clock at night because I couldn't go to bed at midnight.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I can drink a cup of coffee at 10 and 11, be asleep.
She also says coffee is acidic, and acidic drinks can damage and weaken your teeth. Well, like I said, we learned from the fruit juice study that that's not necessarily so. I'm not advocating acidic drinks. I'm just saying the evidence that acidic drinks actually do tooth damage is apparently a little sketchy. She mentions coffee can decrease appetite, and I'm thinking, wow, that would certainly be handy, but I'm not sure that that's true either. Bone loss. There's a point. It is a diuretic. It actually pulls fluid out of the body, and that may cause some calcium problems, especially if you switch from milk to coffee. I think you may have some problems with loss of calcium. Milk, it turns out, for adults, did not seem to prevent fractures, though, so I'm not sure how good milk is at that. And then finally, hyperactivity, a very good point, but from the literature, not really sustained. So I'm asking myself, what should I tell my kids? What should I teach my kids? Water. Yes. Wine, maybe in France, not necessarily in
not
the
your
U.S.,
kids.
Particularly in the southern U.S., wine, not really a viable option.
They'll be drinking box wine if you do that.
Right.
You can't have
milk,
them do that.
Milk, maybe a bad habit to start. Eggnog, bad.
Well, seasonal.
Soda's
I mean,
bad.
Come on. Eggnog is seasonal. Let's be honest. Who drinks eggnog in July?
You don't drink it in July, but the interesting thing that I found in looking at eggnog, again, I was trying to find anything that gave me any kind of health benefit. It turns out eggnog for the colonists, which, by the way, they would put ale in it. Eggnog was pretty much throughout the winter season. It was a festive way all the way through the holidays, not necessarily only a Christmas thing. They apparently would drink it through the winter, and I could see that. Eggnog and a good alcoholic eggnog is pretty tasty.
And warms you up a little bit,
yeah.
Huh? Keeps you warm.
It does. Probably quiet. It's that cough down a little bit. You know, I don't know.
Makes you sleep good eventually.
Yeah. So I'm just despondent. Water's okay, but you got to admit, water gets pretty boring.
Well, the one thing you didn't talk about, Tony, is you didn't talk about the your favorite drink, the green teas, the iced teas, the diet soda. We, you know, I think we all think diet sodas are bad, but every time we talk about the really bad soda, we're talking about the high fructose corn syrup, which is the real thing. That's not the diet versions.
Right.
And so the diet versions are different.
Diet versions are different. And some of the things, first of all, one of the problems is every time they've studied diet sodas, they study people who drink diet sodas, and those people tend to be overweight and trying to lose weight. So they're not the healthiest people. You can't compare simply diet soda drinkers to the general population, which is what they've done with these other things, because in most cases, they may either have a disease or a condition, or they may be obese and want to take on the diet soda to try to improve their health. So it has been difficult to tease out those studies. I did see something, didn't bring it into this show, that perhaps the artificial sweeteners will change the microbiome of your gut. That is, they will grow different germs in your gut than other types of drinks, which could, even though they are calorie-free, it could cause some problems long-term with diet sodas. I will say this, Rick, no signs at all that diet sodas are good for you. No signs that they do what coffee does. If you lined up the evidence behind coffee and the long tradition we've had of coffee, and you put that next to diet sodas, coffee is the clear winner.
So where does Red Bull fall in this?
Too new to tell.
So not bad, not good?
I can't see. I would put it this way. Alarming, but you're right. Certainly not proven to be good.
Are you going to try to get something else in? No, you're not.
No. Green tea, you ask about green tea. I did bring this in. This is back in March, a journal called Psychopharmacology. Green tea may enhance cognitive functioning. That's what I'm hoping, but it was a small study. It was just some healthy male volunteers drank green tea extract, and then they had them doing memory tasks, and they did the functional MRIs. That's where they image the brain and look at what part of the brain is working. There was increased connectivity between the parietal and frontal cortex, suggesting that their brains were activated on green tea. So we know that green tea does a pretty good job as far as cholesterol and cardiac risk factors. We know that green tea may have some cognitive effects, but I'm not that overwhelmed with it. It's not necessarily bad, and I did not like green tea when I started, but I have developed a taste for green tea, and I realized if I could do that, I could probably develop a taste for coffee. Problem is, I will tell you, my wife is not anxious to set up a coffee maker and then have to clean out coffee cups,
Keurig,
and coffee mugs,
Keurig,
and so forth.
Keurig.
Okay.
Keurig. Single cup. Can't go wrong.
Somebody's still got to wash it.
What? No, you don't. You don't have to wash it. You put a fill it with water, you make a cup, you take a little thing out, and you throw it away. Put another one in. No, you don't got to. Nah, that cleaning stuff's hogwash. You don't need to worry about that.
So from health matters, coffee, wine, water above all else, even though it is boring, is a pretty good drink. Green tea seems to be okay. Soft drinks have some significant problems. Milk not maybe as good as we thought. And please, drink eggnog sparingly. There's really nothing good there,
it
is fun.
Lots of people probably just drink it once a year and they're done with it.
Fair enough. Speaking of being done with it, we're done with this fractional portion. Stay tuned for our third and final fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Well, you've done it again. You've managed to waste two-thirds of your hour on Health Matters. We are about to start the third fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is Heme for the Holidays. Our salute to red blood cells and
eggnog.
Sure.
How's that for a combination, right?
And hemoglobin, the chemical that gives the blood its red color. Is that okay to put it that way?
I guess. I'm trying to blend the two, the eggnog, and it's not working for me, Tony. It's a Christmas version of eggnog.
Fair enough.
No, it's not fair enough.
Heme for the Holidays, and this is our third and final fractional portion. For one last time, the fun facts about blood, the color of your life. Just a reminder, you have 5 liters of blood in your body. It's about 45% red blood cells. The other 55% is plasma, which is a watery substance that has proteins, hormones, cholesterol, and vitamins. There are 60,000 miles of blood vessels in your body. The capillaries are 80% of those, and they're tiny blood vessels in your skin and your organs. They are 1/10 the diameter of the human hair. The blood vessels line up and go through one at a time, but there are so many of them, it's sort of like all the checkout lanes at Walmart this time of the year. Red blood cell makes a complete circuit of your body in 30 seconds, says my source. I find that incredible, but that's what it says. With the body at rest, your tissues only take a quarter of the oxygen available in your red blood cells. 3/4 goes back to your lungs, and they refill from your lungs. Unlike other cells in the body, red blood cells have no nucleus. They can't divide. They last about 120 days. They break breakdown, and that's when things start to get interesting. They have hemoglobin that has iron in it, and it contain and it transports oxygen. It carries the oxygen from the blood from the lungs to the rest of the body, and it's very good at latching on to oxygen. Even if you're not getting a lot of oxygen in, it'll pick that up and carry it to your body. In fact, number 10, with 5 liters of blood, we have about 3/4 of a liter of oxygen in our blood. 3/4 of a liter remains in the lungs. If you stop breathing, you've got 1.5 liters of oxygen to work off of. That will last you several minutes, but obviously at some point you're going to run out of oxygen unless you start breathing again. When this hemoglobin breaks down, after 120 days, the red blood cell breaks down. When it breaks down, it's split into iron. It's split into a pigment called bilirubin that gets put in your bowel, in your gallbladder, and it spurts out into your gut. It is turned into the brown stuff that makes your stool brown. Some of it gets absorbed back and goes out the kidneys. That's what makes your urine yellow. And if your liver doesn't do a good job, you get yellow all over, and that's called jaundice. So the hemoglobin colors your skin by providing blood to it. You get pale when you get anemia. It also colors your stool and your urine. That's why hemoglobin is the color of your life.
Which is red, apparently.
Yeah, kind of a
or at least starts
ruddy
red.
Red.
It starts red and ends brown.
Yeah. Sort of like an apple when you think about it, but we're not going to go there. Rick, we had the annual state health rankings were released on December 10th.
How'd we do?
Not good. Sorry to say that. This is the 25th annual America's Health Rankings by the United Health Foundation, the American Public Health Association, and the Partnership for Prevention. They look at each state's performance on 27 core health measures: tobacco use, infectious diseases, vaccination rates, public health funding, cancer, obesity, and things like that. The healthiest states in the United States start with number 5, the fifth most healthy state is Utah. Number 4, Connecticut. 3, Massachusetts. 2, Vermont. And number 1, Rick, for at least 3 years in a row, Hawaii. The healthiest state in the United States with all these core health measures, according to this group. The 5 unhealthiest states, I'll tell you, they go from 5 to 1. The 5th unhealthiest state, Oklahoma. Kentucky slides in at number 4. We were actually 5th last year, so we dropped one. Louisiana's number 3, Arkansas number 2, and the least healthy state in the United States is Mississippi. It's been in the bottom 3 every year since this ranking was first released in 1990, and it is now rock bottom, worst state in the country. Kentucky, unfortunately, is sliding downward, and that's not a good thing. Just some specifics. U.S. residents are more sedentary than ever before, even though we know that exercise is the key to life and health. We don't seem to act on that. Our obesity rates are actually going up again. We thought we might have leveled off. We have not. 29.4% of all adults are obese. That's a 7% increase from last year. 24% of residents are sedentary, up 3% from last year. 9.6% live with diabetes. That's more than double over the past 20 years. Our smoking rates nationally are down a little bit from 19.6% to 19%. Kentucky still high above that. Our infant mortality dropped from 6.3 down to 6.0 deaths per 1,000 births. And we have a 5% increase in our vaccination rate among adolescents. That's pretty neat. We're going to need that. California right now has the worst whooping cough epidemic in 70 years. And part of it is the vaccine is not that effective. Part of it is we are not getting vaccinated. That's the national data, Rick. I'll tell you what happened in Kentucky in 2014. I think, first of all, some of these numbers are a little funny. I'll just tell you that. I mean,
how funny or?
No. I mean, we're 47th. I don't think we're doing well. Our smoking decreased from 29% to 26.5% over the past 2 years.
Wonder what everybody's did.
Yeah. Well, theirs went down.
Did we go with the comparable? Did the percentage drop? Was it comparable?
We were 29 to 26, and nationally, let me find it. It was sitting right here. We were down nationally down from 19.6% to 19%. So, yeah, we had a greater decline, although we're still sitting 26% versus 19% nationally, so not good. The other thing, though, the thing that makes me think this is a little bit odd, over the past 2 years, drug deaths have increased by 30% from 18.4 to 24 deaths per 100,000 population in Kentucky. Now, the problem is the last numbers I have seen or anybody has published on drug overdose deaths in Kentucky were out in 2012. So I think they're a little bit behind. They're taking the most recent data they can get, but the most recent data does not involve House Bill 1, which affected narcotic prescribing, does not involve shutting down the Florida pill mills where Kentuckians were getting their medications. And so I think that situation has changed. I don't know how much, but I do not believe that there's been a significant 30% increase in drug deaths as of 2014. Over the past 2 years, our immunization coverage adolescents increased by 17%, again, which is a pretty good thing. Our adolescents are better protected. They mentioned public health funding has dropped, so that means that this data was collected before Kentucky expanded our Medicaid. So some of this data is a little bit old, but in general, it contributes to an overall ranking of 47, and that's pretty discouraging. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine, Rick, her family is from a neighboring county, and they have lost three prominent people in their county to cancer in about a 12-hour period.
Really?
Yeah, she had a memorial table that 20 years after they graduated. So these people would have been in their mid to late 30s. They had already lost 10% of her high school class.
Wow. That's a lot.
Yeah, it is. I don't think people outside our region realize the slaughter that's going on here. You know, we've talked about 3,500 Kentuckians dying of lung cancer every year, the majority of them in eastern Kentucky, and that's lung cancer alone. It doesn't count the other cancers and heart disease. I want people to get a sense of urgency. That is, this is not the time for complacency. It's not the time to sit still and sit on a 47th place nationally. Now, I can quibble about the drug overdose death data. I can mention that they apparently did not include Kentucky's increased spending on Medicaid as a part of their assessment. But the truth of the matter is, when you look around you and when you see things happening in Rowan County and in the adjoining counties and in eastern Kentucky and across our state, it should make you uneasy. It should make you really want to do the things that we know we need to do. We need to make exercise better available. We need to make nutritious food available. And above all else, we've got to do something about this ungodly smoking rate we've got. An indoor smoking ban is mandatory. We've got to get that passed, and we've got to get our cigarette taxes up, or we're never going to have any impact on these health rankings. We are simply just going to stay stuck at the bottom because we're not doing the things we need to elevate us.
Boy, I don't even know where to go.
Preaching.
Would you like to me to take the soapbox? And I mean, I can certainly pull it out from under you. I mean, I get what you're saying, Tony. I mean, you know, Kentucky, you know, the sad thing is both sad and positive thing is we're showing progress. It's just not happening fast enough to really save lives next year.
Yeah,
we're always too far out, and too many people die needlessly.
Yeah, with thousands of people dying in our state unnecessarily, you get this feeling of being frantic. You know,
there's also a sense of helplessness. I mean, you know, we're trying to help, but when you see the numbers and you realize we're just not getting it as a group of people. The smoking is, to some days I feel encouraged, and other days I'm walking down the street and I realize there's still a lot of people with cigarettes in their hands.
Right.
And you wonder, and the thing is, Tony, is you and I are somewhat blessed in to have jobs that take us and travel. And so they take us all over the U.S. and in some cases the world. So we have a chance to see other communities. And I'm not sure everybody gets to travel outside, or at least far enough away to get out of the region. And, you know, when I go to San Francisco, now granted, San Francisco's got its own warts, and there are things about San Francisco I liked and there are things I didn't like, but you rarely saw somebody with a cigarette. You know, you go to, you know, Chicago, you don't see a lot of cigarette smoking. You go to Florida, you don't see a lot of cigarette smoking. You go to Arizona, you don't see a lot of cigarettes. I mean, why is it that we just can't seem to get it? That these things kill our friends and our family and everything we love.
There is a legacy here. You know, we were the pretty much ground zero for defending tobacco for many years.
Of course. Naturally, because people made a living cutting it, selling it, you know, or drying it, taking it to auction, selling it. I mean, that's still a huge part of the community, albeit here in Rowan County, not as much as it once was. But, you know, still the problem is people overseas still want to buy lots of tobacco. So we still raise lots of tobacco here in Kentucky. It's a crop suited for our environment. It's suited for our geography. Makes sense that, you know, I mean, it's kind of like most really good furniture. Most people don't realize that most really good hardwood furniture comes out of this region. We have the geography that allows us trees, beautiful, glorious trees. And so to some extent, we're bound by the region we live in. But in the same token, this is something that how many people have to die? How many of our friends, family, loved ones, community members, I mean, at what point do we finally go, man, those things are bad.
Right.
And we shouldn't do them.
And we know exactly what action to take. Other states, every other state in the country is ahead of us on this.
Well,
and
but,
so there's not, it's not like there's no vision for what can be done. There's simply no willpower to do it.
It's not so much willpower, Tony. I mean, I agree with you. I think there is some willpower there. I mean, we are, I think if you looked at financially viable states, I think we have more financial problems than most because of the tax base, because of the volume of people that live in the state. You know, there's 4 million people, not a huge tax base, not a lot of income into our systems. You know, we're spending, you know, less per capita on people in school. And it's not that, it's just the money's not there. You know, we just don't have it. And so is it an excuse? Well, no, it's rationalization, maybe. The fact is at some point, this needs to become personal. And it hasn't become personal to the extent of lowering the smoking rates into the teens or the even sub-teens like you see in other states. And that's what gets me is, you know, I lost a friend. You lost a friend. I know we lost a common friend in Scott Overby. Lung cancer. I told this guy every day I knew him, please quit smoking. I tell people at work all the time to the point of making them mad at me. But I've lost people to lung cancer. And it only took one for me to know that this is bad and we can stop it. But it's not personal to everybody yet. It's personal to you. It's personal to me. When does it get personal for everybody else? You driving down the road, think about it. Is it personal to you? You have the ability to stop it.
There's the frustrating thing. We fight the Iraq war pretty much every year, losing 3,500 Kentuckians to lung cancer. And it's not like they're killed with a bullet. Lung cancer will torture its victims before it kills them. So when you look at ISIS, you know, we've talked about this. You look at Ebola virus, no Kentuckians, to my knowledge, at the time we recorded this program, no Kentuckians have died of Ebola virus. 3,500 Kentuckians every year dying of lung cancer. And yet we can't take that step. We're willing to do national preparedness for Ebola. We are not willing to take the steps that we know that every other state is taking for lung cancer. And it just breaks your heart to see these people, like you said, friends, neighbors, family members, public officials, succumb to the effects of tobacco when we know how to prevent this for the next generation and won't do it. This holiday season, you can exchange gifts with people you already know.
Just not eggnog.
Of a similar value, if that's what you think the holiday spirit is about. You can take a moment and really do something valuable. Call your legislator and talk to them about indoor smoking bans and about cigarette taxes, both of which have been proven to lower our rate of smoking. They took action on narcotics. I give them credit for that. They stepped out and took courageous action on narcotics, and I think it's going to pay off for the state. But they
well,
have
I think
thus
the data
far,
already suggests it is.
Yeah. They have thus far not taken that action on tobacco, and we pay that price every single day here in Kentucky. Rick, I got one more thing. I want to kind of lead on a little bit of holiday cheer.
some eggnog for the road.
A perverse holiday cheer I'll give you. But here it is. December 1st, Journal of Clinical Pediatrics. There's been a spike in toy-related injuries. They're up 40% in the last 24 years.
Well, let's be honest. Toys have gotten so much better.
One U.S. child goes to the emergency department every 3 minutes due to an injury from a toy.
Did it say male child?
63% male. Yeah. I will skip ahead, but you are right. 63% of these injuries involve boys. And here's the number one toy might surprise you. The foot-powered scooter. This they call it the Razor, and there are other models.
Of
but
course.
These foot-powered scooters.
It's appropriately named.
Yeah. The injuries for them shot up 74%. And we're not talking small change here. 41,000 back in 1990, up to 72,000 in 2011. That's a third of all toy-related injuries that send kids to the emergency room come from these foot-powered scooters.
But let's be honest, that's just guys learning to be men.
Yeah, so if you've got a nephew, particularly a nephew that's sort of annoying, get him one of those scooters.
No, that's
just wrong.
Let him
do stunts and wind up in the emergency room.
You can't do that.
The most likely age to be injured was 2 years old. Kids under 5 accounted for half the total injuries. Again, 4 out of 5 at home, and 63% were boys. So this holiday season, consider your gift giving. Be strategic about it. If you actually like those boys and those kids, don't get them the foot-powered scooters. Get them something else, and maybe they won't wind up in the emergency room.
Is now the time where we're going to say Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, and let's get off the air.
Special thanks to Morehead State Public Radio producer Spencer Johnson and to Eric Bilber, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org or just visit us on Facebook. just do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember, Health Matters is used to treat anemia, which is a lower than normal number of red blood cells caused by chronic kidney disease or caused by cancer chemotherapy.
Health Matters should not be used for the treatment of anemia if you have a cancer that has a high chance of being cured.
Health Matters has not been proven to improve quality of life, fatigue, or well-being.
Health Matters may cause serious side effects that can lead to death for people with cancer. Your tumor may grow faster and you may die sooner if you choose to listen to Health Matters.
Your healthcare providers receive special training in order to recommend Health Matters, and we'll talk with you in detail about the risk of our show.
For all people who listen to Health Matters, including people with cancer or chronic kidney disease, you may die sooner if you are listening to Health Matters to increase your red blood cells to the same level found in healthy people.
Blood clots may happen at any time while listening to Health Matters. If you're listening to Health Matters for any reason and you're going to have surgery, talk to your healthcare provider about whether you need to take a blood thinner to lessen the chances of blood clots during or following the surgery.
If you know you are allergic to latex, talk to your healthcare provider before listening to Health Matters, because the cover on your radio probably contains latex.
Whatever you do, do not take Health Matters lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week for the first installment of our Ebola serial on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.